Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Employers, simplify your pension scheme with a Zurich Master Trust. Zurich Corporate Pensions. Trust excellence. Visit zurichcorporate.ie.
Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
Hello again. Well, the Black Sea grain deal between Russia and Ukraine is reportedly in a critical state after no ships were inspected today. Representatives from Russia, Turkey and the UN inspect ships on their way to and from Ukrainian ports as part of a deal signed last July by Kiev and Moscow. However, today no ships were inspected, according to the minister in charge of the initiative, Yuri Vaskov. Luke Harding with The Guardian is writing about this today. He joins me now on the line from Kiev. Luke, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
So this update on the movement of grain from Ukraine to world food markets came via the Ukrainian ministry.
I've just got back from Odessa in the south of the country. It's one of three key ports to the grain initiative. And was talking to farmers there. And this afternoon I went to go and see Yuri Vaskov, as you say. And essentially there have been developments today. The Russians, it seems, have effectively pulled the plug on this deal. What normally happens is the Ukrainians send a list of ships to be inspected. This is a very sort of slow and torturous process. Today, the Russians came back with their own list, and the bottom line was that no ships got inspected, and the deal seems very much in doubt.
And is this leverage in order to advance their own exports, or is this to, I suppose, make the West fall foul of the Global South again for international lobbying efforts?
Well, I mean, the Kremlin has been complaining for some time that the deal doesn't really work. For Moscow, it wants relief, it wants sanctions relief on its own agricultural products, on insurance, on a bank. And Kiev, meanwhile, has been saying that the Russians have been deliberately sort of slow peddling this agreement for months. And instead of clearing 10, 15 Ukrainian ships today, they're clearing two or three, knocking off at three in the afternoon. It seems to me, I mean, we don't know for sure what the UN will do next, but it seems to me as if probably this deal is pretty close to collapse.
And so who will intervene in order to regenerate it? Are we looking at something done under the auspices of the UN and Turkey, or are there going to have to be further concessions to Russia before anything is restarted, in your estimation?
Well, I mean, I think, just talking to the minister today, I mean, there are a couple of things that the international community could do. It could lift sanctions on a bank. It could make it easier for agricultural products from Russia to be shipped around the world. But actually, at the same time, there's enormous frustration here because this deal was signed. It's law. It's very clear what you can and can't do. And of course, the Russians are breaching it. But that's not really a surprise. I mean, the war is still raging here on a huge front in the east and the south with missile attacks every day. And the fact that Russia is being obstructive is a surprise to no one, I think.
On that situation in Donetsk, particularly the city of Bakhmut, what is the situation on the front there at the moment? The Russians claiming that they're in control of 75% of that city, having pushed through the centre of it and onto the western side of it. Does it look more and more unlikely that Ukraine will continue to hold here, or is the political imperative to hold it, its symbolic significance, likely to keep them there accruing more losses?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, I've been to Bakhmut. I haven't been there recently because it's just become impossibly dangerous to go inside the city. The one road in and out, Bakhmut sort of sits on a basin, is under continuous Russian fire, and the conditions inside for everybody are completely murderous. And bear in mind, there are still a couple of thousand civilians who, for whatever reason, are refusing to leave. I mean, the Russians have been creeping forward, but they've been taking enormous losses. And this private mercenary group, Wagner, that's been at the forefront of the fighting, seems to have been really pretty much wiped out. And it's now regular Russian units who are going forward. President Zelensky has said he wants to keep the city, and he's not withdrawing yet. So we have to see. I mean, I'm quite surprised the Ukrainians are still there, but they are still there. They've got several thousand fighters who are hanging on for now. And we just have to see how things play out in the next couple of weeks.
And what's the situation with the supply route into the city? Because whatever about the territory they hold in the city itself, the ability to withdraw forces or even keep them supplied seems to have been a key consideration.
Well, that's right. And I was actually talking to one commander recently who was saying that you know that they were worried about the possibility of encirclement. I mean, the Russians are surrounding on three sides now. There's just a Western supply route, and also on top of that, that these fighters are the best fighters that Ukraine has. I mean, they're very good at street fighting. They're incredibly experienced. And they're also taking casualties. I mean, the Russians are taking more casualties, but a lot of Ukrainians are dying all the time. And this is important because everyone is waiting for a Ukrainian counteroffensive. We don't know when it's going to come or where exactly it will be. But clearly, the more seasoned sort of veteran fighters Ukraine loses, the harder it will be to punch through the Russian lines later this month or next month.
And Ukraine is at a relative artillery disadvantage, so that kind of static trench defence is less suited to how Ukraine prefers to operate than we've seen in other parts of the war, like when they first lifted the attack around Kyiv.
I mean, that's certainly true. I mean, and the Russian army has got greater volume. I mean, it's been grinding forward, using superior troop numbers, using sort of artillery to take territory. But at the same time, there's been delivery of Western weapons to Ukraine. They've been arriving tanks, armored vehicles, a few old MiG fighter jets. Not enough, Kyiv says. And I do think the war is at sort of critical stage. I mean, essentially, the question is, can Ukraine break through in the next couple of months like it did last autumn with offensives in the northeast and south liberating the city of Kherson, which was very successful? Or are we looking at a stalemate situation with the war dragging on for months and probably years to come? So we have to see, but the huge stakes here, really.
Well, finally, on that front, this leaked intelligence that's appeared online, apparently via a gaming platform, has outlined quite a pessimistic assessment of how dramatic the gains the Ukrainians might make would be. What do we know about, firstly, I suppose, the veracity of the material that's been leaked online and the provenance?
Yeah, I mean that's a great question, which the Pentagon, which you know, Dublin, London, Berlin are all scrambling to answer. I mean, what we think is that these documents are real, that the leak is significant. I was talking to a Ukrainian contact who says that they're kind of examining the fallout. I mean, I was saying how serious it is. There's no answer yet. But actually, Mikhail Podolyak, who's a sort of senior government advisor here in Kyiv, was saying, look, we don't care about the leaks. What we need is heavy weapons, airplanes, tanks, and so on. And I think that's very much the message from Ukraine, that don't worry about the media noise. Just give us heavy weaponry so we can defeat the Russians and liberate our territory.
Okay, Luke Harding, Guardian correspondent in Kyiv. Thanks very much for sparing the time to talk to us today.